New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Welcome to Edge of Sports, the podcast brought to you by The Nation magazine. This week, I'm joined by basketball savant Arya Shirazi for the last in our series about the NBA playoffs. Why is it the last in our series about the NBA playoffs? Because they're over. It ain't that deep. And we are going to speak today about the Boston Celtics in five games, annihilating and outclassing the Dallas Mavericks. If you want to hear some off-kilter commentary that's not like what you're going to get in your usual spot, you're absolutely in the right place here at Edge of Sports, here with The Nation. So, you know, there's not much to say from my perspective before I throw it to Arya. I've got a lot to say, but on the most superficial front, you know, the Celtics, in my mind, totally outclassed the Luka, Doncic, Kyrie Irving combo with a balanced three-point heavy attack. They targeted and picked on Doncic defensively. Kristaps Porzingis actually showed up for a few games. Jaylen Brown showed out. The Wahlbergs were happy. So there it is. Now, Arya, as I throw it to you, let's remember, and we're going to have to address this, that you and I both had the Mavericks in six, and I think we should dissect why we were wrong. But first, any impressions of the series that you want to share?
I mean, as you said, there's not too much to really pore over. This was not a series filled with drama. It was not a series that seemed to could have gone either way. It was not a series where games came down to the last possessions in the fourth quarter. That's what you want out of a finals. And that certainly was not the tone or tempo of this championship series. The result was what you and I were very clear and partisan the entire year that we did not want to happen. Mm-hmm. And we spoke out a lot of different ways about how we didn't see it happening. Mm-hmm. And we were wrong on every one of those ways. I'd like to think that it was not inevitable. I don't want to, you know, the last stubborn breath that I have of this season is that I refuse to allow myself to believe that it was inevitable. Mm-hmm. That regardless of what happened or how things played out or this and that, the Boston Celtics were going to win the NBA title. They were the best team throughout the season. It was pretty clear they were actually the best team in the postseason, even when they were not playing their best. But you and I also thought that their opponent in the finals was the perfect opponent to end their run, to take them out. So I'd like to think that there were ways, even with every team's construction in the postseason, that this wasn't the result, that there could have been matchups both on the road to the finals and potential opponents in the finals that could have crowned a different champion. But at this point, that's just kind of ignorant pride talking, because I mean, Boston, as you said, it was not everything that seemed exciting about this matchup didn't play out. You and I were both eagerly anticipating game one. I was incredibly excited once the final started. And I hate to say it, but I feel like halfway through the first, it was clear Boston was better. And that sucks. And granted, you can have first quarters of game ones or even game one, which tell a story, you know, which seem to be telling a story, and then the remainder of the series can tell a different story. So I'm not trying to. So it wasn't immediate doomsday, but it turned out to be immediate doomsday, because who Boston looked like off the get versus Dallas is who they were. And before I turn it back to you, I will say, Porzingis, whose own return and effectiveness and durability were big question marks going into this series. All those question marks remain topics. His effectiveness and his availability were both topics, storylines that came up. But man, when he played, did he play well? Did he play well? And he was clearly, I think their biggest difference maker in game one, and then went out with injury for game two, or in the middle of game. He was almost
two thirds into game.
Right,
two.
Right. This game three didn't feel right in game two, and really what kind of seals the deal is that Boston was just as good when he wasn't there as when he was. So when he was, it just added another element, another unguardable element, another kind of insulting element of what makes this year's Celtics the Celtics. But the fact that they were still thriving and dominating, whether Porzingis was on the court or not, or available to be on the court, you said outclassed, and that has to be what it has to be what it was.
Yeah, I noticed from the beginning that the Mavericks were going to lose this series, not just because they were being dominated, but because it felt like when they were able to stay close, it was because the Celtics were missing open shots. That was the Celtics' greatest foe in this series, was shooting a lower than average percentage from 3-point range, but they were constantly getting these great catch and shoot threes.
Wide open the entire series.
Wide open the entire series because of, let's say it, like brilliant ball movement, great teamwork, unselfish play. Everything I hate about Jason Tatum's game really wasn't there. Like the ball did not stick to him too long. He shared. And Jaylen Brown absolutely deserved the MVP in my mind. He was their best player. He hit the most important shot of the series when things were the one game where things were kind of close in game three. And he rose up and hit this beautiful double clutch 20 footer. And it was a play right after Jason Tatum tried to hero ball it and like threw it out of bounds off the top of the backboard, swinging his arms up and begging for a foul call. My God, I do not like watching Jason Tatum play basketball. But Jaylen Brown, smooth as silk, hit the most important shot of the series, shot at a high percentage. He was the MVP of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Just a great show out performance from Jaylen Brown. And I'll say this as well. While I can't stand that the Celtics won, you know that, you know, this show is built on this foundation of sports and politics. So to see Jaylen Brown's stature elevated when he's, you know, a political athlete, cares about the world, speaks out about things. You know, in 2020, he filmed himself traveling from Boston to Atlanta to take part in a Black Lives Matter march, like created this whole thing about the experience of doing that. And he wears, you know, Free Gaza stuff. I mean, it's just wearing bracelets, but that's more than a lot of folks are doing. So, you know, I'm glad for the MVP, Jaylen Brown. But let's get to something that I want to say, and I'm going to say it. This is really bothering me. Everyone right now, it feels like, is leading with, oh, the Celtics were a historically great team. They were the best team wire to wire. And that makes us, who are being honest, look marginalized. Like, oh, we're so dumb. We didn't pick the Celtics. They were the best team wire to wire. But a lot of people picked the Mavs to win these finals. We were not out on an island, despite the Celtics' dominance. And I want to sort of stick up for that pick, because I think one could hear this and think, with some justification, that I at least was looking for a reason to not pick the Celtics because I can't stand the Celtics, which is true. And therefore, that's why I picked the Mavs. I created a scenario where they could win. And I want to push back against that because, yes, the Celtics were great, but it was universally acknowledged that this was a flawed team. I think, despite their good record, they were pretty listless in the playoffs before the finals. The finals was their best series of the entire playoffs. They were listless against a Heat team that didn't have Jimmy Butler, where they dropped a game. They were listless against the Cavs, who kept it close even without Donovan Mitchell for much of that series and Jared Allen for all of that series. They were really listless against the Pacers, who played them better than any team in the playoffs. I mean, it was a 4-0 sweep, but the Pacers really quite easily could have been up 3-1 in that series entering a game 5 if things break this way or that. It's just, you know, Rick Carlisle made some gobsmacking coaching decisions, which frankly I find amusing because I'm not a fan. I mean, I swear, man, when the Pacers were playing the Celtics, I was rooting for the Meteor. Just not my favorite teams. But the Celtics, you know, they were known to sort of get weird on offense and disappear for long periods. And I thought the Mavs had the best player in the series in Luka Doncic. And that felt like a recipe to exploit that listlessness. I mean, and let's remember game 2 when the Mavericks went on that 20-2 run. That was exactly the kind of thing that I thought could happen. The problem was they went on a 20-2 run when the Celtics were up 22. And they couldn't quite get over the mountain and win. But I thought there would be more of that. When really the Celtics, other than that one game that they pretty much, I mean, in retrospect, gave away so they could win the championship at home. Not a conspiracy theorist. But that's where I end on when I really think about this series. I end on the fact that it was not inevitable. There was a formula for the Mavericks to win this series, but they were not the better team for these particular 5 games.
I do not feel ridiculous for picking Dallas to win the series. When the series started, the Mavericks had been playing better than any team in the playoffs. With, as you said, the Celtics were listless in victory in the earlier rounds, while the momentum and the energy Dallas had was propelling them through rounds en route to the finals. And as you said, they clearly had the best player who was playing incredible ball. So that is what I love about sports and what I love about the NBA playoffs is that every series is going to kind of have its own beat, is going to have its rhythm. And matchups are different and tempo is different. And a team that can look one way against one opponent can look completely different for better or for worse against another. This probably sounds a little bit bitter, and I don't mean it to, but the Celtics, they avoided Philly and Milwaukee.
Yes.
And that is big. That is big. The teams that really were constructed to possibly capitalize on where Boston wasn't the strongest and turn the rhythm to the opponent rather than to Boston, they didn't have to play. They didn't. Even their first round series against Miami was without Butler.
Exactly.
So again, I know that this sounds whiny, but it's really not, because Boston absolutely deserve to win the championship that they won. But we're going back as to why we were seeing what we saw when this matchup was set and when the series started.
But I also think Shiraz, it's important to point out that that this Celtics team is being debated right now as being an all-time team. That's the other reason why it's important that we have this discussion about why we saw them as flawed. Because I just feel like there's this tidal wave of impressionism, of just, you know, looking at this dominant series against the Mavericks, looking at their playoff record, looking at their 64 wins, and saying this is an all-time team. And I'm kind of like, is it? I mean, there was an inevitability to the 72-10 Chicago Bulls, you know? I thought there was an inevitability to the 73-9 Golden State Warriors team. But, you know, that's the great thing about the sport. You know, you just don't know sometimes. But I just want to lay out some of these flaws in Boston so we don't start lumping them in a category that I don't think they deserve.
Yeah, fortunately, the only sports writing I ever read is your stuff. Ah. So I am completely, I've missed all of the talk about where they might rank or being an all-time team. That stuff doesn't reach me, fortunately, because that could be potentially antagonizing.
Quite fortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I hold the 2008 Celtics, the last team before this one that won the title. I consider them a greater team than this. And I don't look at numbers. I mean, I'm sure if you looked at defensive rating and WAR and other stuff that's used to gauge stuff that I couldn't care less about, I'm sure that this Celtics team ranks very, very high and ranks higher than the Pierce team in 08. I don't care about that. You know, I watch basketball and I feel as though the 08 team was a greater team, team of greater significance and of greater. One thing that struck me in this finals is that I realized, I think for the first time, that if this exact team was anybody but the Boston Celtics, I would really, really like them. Because with the exception of Tatum, I really like those players. You talked about Brown. We talked about Porzingis. Jrue Holiday has been one of my favorite players in the NBA pretty much since he stepped into the league years ago with the Sixers. So
Derek White, man.
And White is
incredible White shot blocker.
Is good at every aspect. And that's what makes, I mean, that's why I like this Boston team. For every pundit that is trying to create a narrative where Jason Tatum is an all-time great, that's going down completely the wrong path, in my opinion. That is seeing this team and their title totally wrong. It's that this is a team, which again is why I said if they were anybody but Boston, I'd probably really be into this team because I like their components and I like the way they play. It's infuriating because it's the team I can't stand. But a team that plays smarter on offense where everybody can shoot, has some dynamic playmakers in order to create those looks, is a consistently good or great defensive team. That's the kind of, I like that kind of basketball. So, and that is the way the Celtics played. You had, I feel like you'd mentioned this a couple of times and you did again when we, in our finals preview, you've, talked about Joe Mazzulla as potentially overmatched. And I, whenever you've said that, I've actually.
Is Jason Kidd?
Yes, yes. You said you do not believe in the Celtics team. You think they have a lot of flaws, and you think they have, and you think they have an overmatched coach.
Wow.
I did not agree with that. I felt like maybe you were willing it to be true. And I wanted it to be true, so I stayed mum. But actually, Mazzulla has, he's been great in those 2 years. You know, he
a lot of problems, especially coming in the way he did on the
coming in the way he did with a hard act on court to follow in Udoka. Mm-hmm. Does a great regular season. They go down 3-0 to Miami. So I think there's no shame in a rookie coach being out coached by Eric Spoelstra. Every veteran coach.
And he got it back to 3-3.
And then he got it back to 3-3, exactly. So that, he had a great kind of first season. And then he seemed to do everything right this year, unfortunately, when I was just looking for him to do things wrong and for the team to do things wrong. So I think actually this is, to me, and you and I agree on where Jason Tatum should stand in the hierarchy of today's player, you know, an all-star forward and a key player in a team that just won a championship. But to me, and this is in Boston's favor, this is not an insult, I feel as though this, no team has won the championship with a worse best player, whether you consider that player Tatum or Brown, and most would consider it Tatum, since the 04 Pistons. I think every team since those 04 Pistons, which are rightfully renowned and hailed still 20 years later for the fact that that collective beat the ultimate star power assembled team, I don't think any team has won that hasn't had a top five player since then. And Boston has a top 15 player and probably four top 30 players, which is why they are the Celtics. But again, I think that that speaks well to them. The fact that any of those five guys could be the MVP of a game. And that really, I really came to accept that in this one-sided finals, recognizing that they're the best team because they're the only team in the NBA where all five of their starters in their preferred healthy starting lineup can be the best player in a win. No other team can say that. And that's ultimately what I saw here. We were so high on Luka, and everybody was. He's the best player in the NBA, I believe. Luka looked mortal here after not looking mortal in the second half of the season and in the road to the finals. And listen, when you make it to the fourth round, you're going to be exhausted. And he looked exhausted. And, you know, we don't know the extent of injuries. But, you know, being as you said, kind of geared up against on defense, kind of, you know, putting even more tread on the legs. Boston cut off his first preferred drive every time, and then he didn't have a second or third usually. And that's what's always made Luka. He wasn't finding those wide open shooters that he was finding that were draining shots against Minnesota. They didn't have those looks. Those endless alley-oops to Gafford and Lively, they were not there.
They were cut
down. So as impressed as I was with how Dallas absolutely broke down Minnesota's top-ranked defense, they were not able to break down Boston's top-ranked defense. And what I saw was Luka's driving lane being cut down, his kick out to open shooters weren't there, and with the shot clock winding down, he was forced to put up a lot of turnaround J's that were short. And I saw that all series. And that is not an indictment on him, but it is to Boston's credit that the dominant player in the series, while still looking like the most talented player in the series throughout, because he is, he did not have that all-world series that it looked like it would be impossible to prevent him from having.
He didn't have like that like 50-point game that we know he has in him and that we've seen him do in the past in the playoffs. You know, it's interesting. You were talking about the Celtics as a team and the fact that, you know, some people might have Tatum in the top five. I think that's absurd.
I have him in the top 15.
Yeah, I'm with you there, big time. But, you know, one of the jokes, you know, I'm not usually pro-management in this regard, but one of the jokes was that the MVP of the series should have been Brad Stevens, the general manager of the club. And I don't know, this is, I like Brad Stevens. I liked him when he coached Butler. I thought he was and then he's immediately elevated to coaching the Celtics. As a young dude, like the basketball mind this guy must have in an interview room to go from Butler to the Celtics.
And backed it up.
And backing it up immediately, showing immediate improvement, and then getting kicked upstairs, which I thought was just bizarre at the time. It's like, what makes him think he can be this great executive? I mean, he hasn't really proven himself as a coach yet. Seems like he just got here, and he's freaking, you know, Branch Rickey up in there. You know, I mean, these moves he made really put this team together. First of all, the guts to trade Marcus Smart when he was, you know, lauded as the heart and soul of the team, a defensive player of the year. The fans love him. Someday he'll have his number retired, blah, blah, blah.
I thought that would be a huge loss for them, but not to cut you off, they instantly brought in the perfect guy to replace Marcus Smart, another defensive stopper who's twice the offensive player.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel as though the trade of Smart was instantly neutralized by the Holiday acquisition.
Oh, it was genius. It was also great because, you know, Marcus Smart, really, from the stuff I read, whatnot, really saw himself as part of like a big three with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and he was the most vocal leader in the locker room, and that's a tough combination when you know it's the whole concept of the team is not meant to be around a big three. It's supposed to be a five out concept. So first of all, him elevating himself in that regard was not exactly the vibe they were going for on the team. And, you know, just very bluntly, you know, Marcus Smart was thinking he was better than he is. And that can be disruptive. And if he's the big locker room guy, then is there enough space for your best players to be able to have a voice? which, you know, you don't always have the best player be the person who is able to rally the team together, but you at least want to provide space for them to have a voice in that regard. So, yeah, it was gutsy to trade Smart, and it was gutsy to trade for a guy named Porzingis who, you know, injury history speaks for itself. And then just the masterstroke of seeing Drew Holiday get traded to Portland and just jumping on that, trading again some popular guys in, you know, the Time Lord, Robert Williams, you know, trading him was a bit of an OMG. You know, you're trading Malcolm Brogdon, who is just sixth man of the year. You know, you're putting out these players who were part of the fabric of the team because you could bring in Drew Mother Bleepin' Holiday.
Why exactly does Robert Williams get to be called the Time Lord?
Oh, because Boston sports sucks. And, you know, within 30 games, they gave him a nickname and a persona and talked about him being the legacy of Parrish and McHale and all the crap. So it's like they've already put that on his shoulder. So that's why he gets to be the Time Lord.
Yes, he's a decent backup center. So he's a
decent backup center. Exactly.
What is Drew Eubanks' cool nickname? We're doling out Time Lordship here.
Yeah.
No, I'm not trying to tear. Yes, Brad made great moves, but I also feel like you might be giving him a little extra credit. I mean, like Holiday comes available. Like, it, you know, I don't know that it takes a genius to offer Malcolm Brogdon and the Time Lord. And Porzingis, I don't think that was risky, you know, really. I mean, it's they didn't give up much, and it's Porzingis. I mean, at worst he gets injured, and then it didn't quite work out. But I don't think that that was a move that could have gone wrong. I think it was scary for everyone not in New England, and frustrating for everyone not in New England when that happened. Then the Holiday thing just made everything worse, and our worst fears came to fruition.
It's an interesting question, though, because, like, how savvy? I mean, if we don't say that the seizing of Drew Holiday was incredibly savvy and quick and brutal, like just a killer chess move, if we say it was the obvious move that, you know, obviously he should have done, it raises the question of how stupid is Milwaukee? Why would they send Drew Holiday to a place without some sort of, I don't know, some sort of agreement, or like they would only send Drew Holiday to a place where he would sign a max contract? Like, were there other ways that the Bucks could have done it to not have their chief rival basically for, you know, part, with all respect to the Time Lord, you know, with just basically some bits and pieces and some draft picks, you know, they're bringing in a sincerely better version, a true level up from Marcus Smart, who they had just lost. It's an unbelievable gaffe by the Bucks to me, or it was this brilliant chess move by Stevens, because they didn't have to trade him to the Celtics. You know, but Stevens made the offer that made it happen.
No, that's a very good point you bring up, man. Yeah, Milwaukee really kind of screwed everybody in that regard. But I don't think that they were looking, and this probably is an indictment of them and what they've wrought. But they weren't, when they dealt Drew, I think they were only thinking about acquiring Lillard.
Yeah.
So I don't think putting any preconditions. They looked at Lillard as a definite upgrade over Holiday. Not everybody would agree with that. Mm-hmm. But they felt as though the roster that won the championship 3 years ago wasn't going to win now, and that Lillard was an upgrade over Holiday. Two great players. And so I don't think, and they should have, maybe, but I don't think that they were then looking at what happens to Holiday. I think everybody knew that Portland was going to look to flip him. And, you know, man, even as I'm saying this, I think that you're righter than I thought that you were 10 minutes ago in kind of the savviness of the acquisition. To me, it seemed obvious. But, right, why did Portland, for Jrue Holiday, he was the most had to be the most coveted name out there. Why did Boston's offer, why was that the best one? So, yes, I on the surface, it seemed like, yeah, Jrue Holiday is available. You're giving up two players that aren't as good as Jrue Holiday after just acquiring Porzingis. So you're really playing for a championship. But you're right. No, that didn't need to be the winning bid.
Yeah,
I wish it hadn't been. Why the fuck was it?
It's unbelievable. Because Jrue Holiday, a player I have loved since UCLA.
Brad put that after making it to the finals 2 years ago and the seventh game of the East Finals last year, Brad changed his already really good roster to get certain players, and it worked out absolutely perfectly. So, yeah, Stevens did a brilliant job.
And Jrue Holiday did what, in my opinion, is the most underrated all-time finals play of my lifetime. And I can't believe this isn't played on a million highlight shows, but it's game six. They're up one on the Suns. Booker drives. You know, remember, Suns are only down one at this point, and there's like, I don't know, there's under 24 seconds left. Booker drives. Holiday, like he's Kawhi Leonard, just claws the ball and rips it out of his hands. And then while a lot of players at this point, including the way I would coach a player, would have just held the ball and waited to be fouled or tried to dribble out the clock a little bit and then get fouled because you're under 24 seconds and you're only up one, he goes full charge down the court, throws an alley-oop to Giannis. And then Chris Paul, in an act of such stupidity, again, you wonder why this isn't talked about, just pushes Giannis. Giannis dunks the ball. Now they're up three, hits the free throw. They're up four, game over. If Paul doesn't foul him, it's still a three-point game. So just the Jrue Holiday mindset of not only will I take the ball from you, but I'm going to like throw a half-court alley-oop. To me, is just some serious stones, and I think he's a great player.
When Holiday got traded to Portland, and part of the headline was Portland will probably look to move him.
Yes.
I hit you up and said he better not go to Boston.
Yes, you did.
That was my first, like that, you know, and so exactly what I instantly dreaded occurred. And the reason that I dreaded it those many months ago was because of what just occurred. So a great team to put together, and still a thin team. I mean, nobody impressed me off the bench who I didn't think would. We knew that their bench was, or their they go eight deep. Their other five were Horford, Pritchard, and Hauser. It was only those guys, and they all played well, which sucks. Mm-hmm. But they don't even have a ninth guy.
Yeah.
They don't even have – Dallas has a ninth guy.
Yeah.
That they could – you know, Boston doesn't, and those eight proved out to be exactly enough and exactly the right. Eight, just like the Celtics – 16 years ago, I don't expect this team to go back-to-back.
Really? So, that was the last question before we end up. Before we go there, just a rewind to 2008, I just got to ask you, like, given what we – because you talked about the 08 team being much more epic than the 24 team on the all-time thoughts and standings and whatnot. Given what we now know about Doc Rivers as a coach – should we view the 08 championship as that much more incredible? And should we view the fact that they didn't repeat as kind of an indictment of Doc Rivers? That's my question.
Part of it. I mean, I thought
terrible coach.
I thought, yeah, but he wasn't then. He wasn't then. He's gotten. I don't think that he deserves none of the credit for Boston. I think,
and I shouldn't even call him a terrible coach. I mean, he's not. He has not proven to be a championship level coach.
No, with teams that were constructed to win championships, and I've been an even more vocal detractor of Doc. I feel he's gotten worse as he's aged and inherited squads already built to make deep runs. When he was was fronting those young Orlando teams, I thought he was a really good young coach. Yeah. I thought it was justified why he had been plucked out of the broadcast booth, as J.J. Redick just was, I thought he did a really good job in Boston. It's since then that I think he's been crap. And this Celtics victory is more impressive to me than 08, because I think that 08 team is better. I think the players on the 08 team is better. So I think it was not a fluke that they won that year. They were built, I think, to win, you know, just that one year. And I hope that the rest of the league is going to react accordingly and come in with a bunch of squads that can take the Celtics down. As I said, I already think that there's a couple of teams in the East that if they had been healthy enough to win rounds that people thought they would win and meet Boston instead of Indiana, maybe Boston would have been more weary, as Doncic clearly was, to not be able to come out with such energy and dictate the series. That's all I'm saying. So I'm thinking that, you know, we're just about to start free agency. And I'm certainly hoping the teams in both conferences come in ready to make this another just one-off, one season run.
Wow. It's going to be interesting, man. I think they're built to last. I think the Knicks with a healthy Randle, and, you know, they're talking about a big trade, Deuce McBride, Bojan, a bunch of picks for the last man from Nova, from the Crew, Mikal Bridges. So we'll see what happens with the Knicks. Would be an interesting fit. Although maybe too much Nova, I don't know, man.
Way too much. And I personally like Bridges.
And I like McBride, frankly.
I like Bridges. Clearly, Bridges as a number one guy means your team is bad. And so on New York, he would not be a number one guy, which means he'd probably be a very good acquisition. I don't know if two good rotation players and several picks, I don't know if he's worth that much. Mm-hmm. And if Ananobi does come back, which is looking far from definite.
Yeah.
I don't know that if Ananobi is there, I don't know that Bridges is the guy to acquire.
I really hope Ananobi and Hartenstein come back and they try to, I mean, I don't care if they add pieces at all, but the core of this club really impressed me, and I hope they try to run the core back, and I'm including Randle in that. You know, our good buddy Luke Brewer once said something that I thought was very smart, which was talking about who would be the best forward to play alongside Jalen Brunson, and describing attributes, he said, sounds a lot like Julius Randle. And it's true. I mean, I think we throw Randle as a bit of a deficit sometimes because of some of the playoff performances. But my God, regular seasons, his all-star.
He's been great for the Knicks. He's been great for the Knicks.
He's transformed. He's really responsible for transforming the team in that regard. But I digress. Shiraz, I think now we don't have to talk about the Celtics until they win it all next year.
That's good news. I just heard that last part.
It was good, man. Hey, man. I would rather watch the movie Celtic Pride than the Boston Celtics win again next year.
Yeah, me too, because, you know, hopefully that movie doesn't exceed 2 hours, but I'll never watch that, so the Celtics better not win again next year.
Celtic Pride is 3.5 hours. It was directed by David Lean. So, hey, for everybody out there listening, thank you so much to The Nation magazine. Thank you. Go to thenation.com. They've got amazing coverage these days, and always, but honestly, recently they've been on a heater. Thank you for everybody out there listening. For Arya Shirazi, I'm Dave Zirin. Please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.